Welcome to Lightning in a Bottle, the essential podcast for middle market business owners, key stakeholders, and the advisors who guide them. I'm Josh Pottinger and joined by my co-host, Jason Chirogiannis. Together, we lead ATX Wealth Partners, a private wealth management team at UBS here in Austin, Texas. Now, over the course of almost 30 years, we've built a vibrant community and have curated a suite of resources tailored for your success, from insightful white papers and cutting-edge research to exclusive in-person events and expert-led podcasts. We are here to provide the tools that you need. Now, if you're considering an exit, this is likely the most significant financial decision of your life, and typically, you only have one chance to get it right. So our mission is clear: to arm you with the knowledge to enhance the value of your business, navigate a successful sale, and of course, optimize your post-exit financial outcomes. Now with that, let's dive in and unlock the strategies that will prepare you for a prosperous future. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Josh Pottinger with ATX Wealth Partners here at UBS Private Wealth in Austin, Texas. And joining me today is my good friend and business partner for the last almost 25 years, Jason Chirogiannis.
As of October. And we physically sat in that same office all but one of those years, which is amazing.
Well, we also have a couple of colleagues joining us here, and I will introduce each of them. First one is going to be Deborah Ferris, and she is an executive director and senior strategist here at UBS, and she's part of our family advisory and philanthropy services group here in the Americas. And so as a senior strategist on the UBS family advisory and philanthropy services team, Deborah works with families in understanding their relationships with money, values, and philanthropy. And both Deborah and our other guest, Jennifer, are part of our extended team, and we collaborate with them on a regular basis. But anyway, Deborah, she's one of our thought partners here, and she brings over 30 years of experience collaborating with ultra high net worth individuals and families and private foundations and nonprofit organizations. And so she's a wonderful, wonderful resource for us. And also joining us is Jennifer Lamb, and she's an executive director, senior wealth strategist with our advanced planning group. So Jennifer works with ultra high net worth clients of UBS and advisors like us on issues involving estate and tax planning, business succession, wealth transfer, philanthropic objectives. And Jennifer is also a tremendous resource for our team as we try to provide great advice and solutions for our clients. So this is our first podcast of the year. So we're pretty excited about this. A new year, a new lens, and we're going to be talking about pre-sale planning. There's been a few changes with tax law. And anyway, we figured we'd kick off the new year with a nice conversation about a very important thing in a founder's life. Probably one of the, it's more than likely one of the biggest moments in a business owner's life, which is selling their company. So we're going to be talking about what needs to happen before and after the transaction to help them and their families avoid regret and protect what really matters. That's it. That's the intro. Why don't we get into this? Jason, kick it off.
All right. Well, you've probably mentioned in prior podcasts that the tagline on our website is "You have options, be informed, plan early." And even though, of course, we're largely focused on investments, we probably spend as much time outside of the investment world on the likes of tax planning and estate planning and so forth. And those words really ring true. The earlier we can get going, the better in so many ways. So, Jennifer, I'll start with you. When you meet business owners who are thinking about selling, why does engaging early make such a difference?
Happy to answer that. So a lot of owners, you know, they're really focused on the business, the valuation of the business, the income tax effect at the moment of the sale. But the reality is that a lot of the most effective strategies only work before the business is sold, whether that's income tax outcomes, estate planning, even the structure of the deal itself. It can really kind of change what kind of net proceeds the owner might receive, you know, and once the transaction is closed, a lot of those levers kind of disappear. A lot of what we look at is, who do you want to sell to? Are we selling to employees? Are we selling to family members? Are we selling to third parties? Are we selling the assets? Are we selling the ownership structure? All those different kinds of things. And a lot of the things that we look at, especially even from an income tax perspective, is the structure of the business itself. There are certain income tax benefits to being structured in certain ways, like qualified small business stock or things like that. And so the earlier we get in, kind of looking at those structures, seeing if we can get maximum benefit, whether that's having to reorganize things or just kind of thinking through like what that might look like long term. Obviously, the earlier, the better. And then even just from an estate planning perspective, which is my specialty, is the sooner you gift your business, right? The value of your business today is probably the lowest it's ever going to be. So if you gift it out today, then you can essentially get a lot of that appreciation out of your estate. So really being thoughtful and getting in early, and early can mean several years early, is can be really beneficial in the long term and kind of more forward thinking.
Well, flipping that on its head, is there a time frame through the lens of the IRS, at least, where it becomes quote unquote too late? The proximity of the transaction?
For certain aspects of it, it certainly can be. From kind of a gifting perspective, if you're trying to gift some of the shares of your business out of your estate to family members or irrevocable trusts or things like that, you do have to be careful. If you're going to gift like a minority interest to somebody, and for valuation purposes, you know, you would like to take a lower valuation, so you use a little bit less of your exemption. If you do something like that very close to the sale and the valuation number of like what one share would be worth is significantly different than the gift tax value you took versus what you sold it for, then that could make you open to audit from the IRS and things that they would look at. Additionally, from if you would like to do some charitable planning prior to the sale, gift some shares out for charitable purposes, obviously you want a higher valuation there, but there are some rules, some legal rules about, it's called the assignment of income doctrine, and being very careful about when you make that gift. If you are too far down the line of the sale, then you might not get the charitable benefits that you intended.
So if an LOI is on the table, probably too late. Okay.
Yes.
Deborah, what do you think from your perspective, what gets missed when planning starts too late?
Well, thank you first for having me.
Yes.
What gets missed? Well, I will say that early planning turns a transaction into a thoughtful transition. We like to think that planning early is a runway, and we want our families to get engaged before the wealth comes in, before this liquidity event, because that will ultimately kind of change the makeup of the family. The human side is a big part that gets missed. I say that because families often underestimate how disruptive the liquidity is. Your balance sheet isn't the only thing that changes. Your family roles, your family expectations, and sometimes your family identity, those will shift and change. And so you want to make sure you're having these conversations before the sale, where this new wealth, new tax realities, everything gets loud and scattered. And so having the early conversations, families can kind of try to solve these emotional and relational challenges before the money arrives, or tensions are heightened. If you wait, you're going to have questions. You're going to have people coming at you. Whereas this way, you can be proactive. We have a long runway. In our work with families, we sit down with them and we help them define what their wealth is for, how they'd like to use it. And of course, that leads into philanthropic planning, where we start to have those conversations as well. We really want to make sure that as early as possible, and we always tell our families, it's not necessarily everything at once, but you want to start with a little bit of clarity and transparency, and start, you know, even if it's 2 years out, start dripping the thought with the family so they understand how wealth will change the makeup and their day-to-day business.
Deborah, you know, one of the things that we've used in the past is, it's not necessarily an on or off switch. It's more of a dimmer switch. And I love that visual. And I think it's very relevant, particularly with a lot of the cases that we work on.
Yes, because pre-sale, the awareness, it's like a building phase.
Mm-hmm.
And I always talk to people, it's like, it takes a while to build your home. You got to start with the plans, the schematic design, then you got the framework, then you can decide how you're going to lay out all the rooms. And decorating is way down at the end of at the end. But you can start talking about building your house right now and what you want it to look like. So definitely, it's about not solving everything right now. It's really the pre-sale time is really when you want to surface questions and start engaging your family in the conversations.
Jennifer, taking Deborah's metaphor of building the house through an estate planning focused conversation, when you begin to probe, what are the very basic questions you put forth? Maybe some of the more detailed questions. What are you really trying to get to the heart of so that you can help propose a very intentional estate plan, if you will?
When we're dealing with business owners and upcoming liquidity events or post liquidity events, sometimes too, and sales, obviously legacy is a big part of it. And we really try and get to know the client holistically, both from sometimes this is a client's very first liquidity event. And so maybe their idea of gifting is a little bit different because they would like to keep some of the liquidity versus maybe it's their second or they're going to retire, whatever that looks like from their personal vantage point and point of view and who they want to benefit from it and really getting a good understanding of that. And so when we're kind of modeling out what an estate plan might look like for them, the questions that we might ask, right? We one very much want to understand like financially, like where do they want to be in personally that they have free access, free reign to everything else. And then if there's more above and beyond that, including if dependent upon the type of sale that we see, if it's a full exit versus if there's going to be some equity long term, can we plan with that from an estate planning perspective? Because a lot of these liquidity events are very meaningful and they are wonderful for the families that built the businesses, but then there's also the estate tax piece that might take place long term. And can we kind of help alleviate some of that with some pre-sale planning, right? Like what I talked about before is getting that appreciation out early, right? It's at its lowest value now. So if there is interest in getting it out, like what does that look like? There are things like annual exclusion gifts that you can make smaller gifts to family members so that they can take part in the sale versus larger gifts in irrevocable trusts and what the structures of those look like and the income tax effect of that, both to the owner selling it and then the beneficiaries going forward if they plan on gifting some of the proceeds either pre-transaction or post-transaction to them. So we really like to get a good idea of what their long-term kind of trajectory is, making sure that we're working right with Deborah and with both of you to get that big holistic picture and then model out whatever trust that might look like to make sure it matches all of that.
Can you mention what the current exemption levels are and just give a high-level, plain vanilla approach that somebody might consider?
Sure. Annual exclusion gifts are those gifts that you can give to as many different people as you want, but you can only give $19,000 to each person. That's the limit this year. And that annual exclusion gift does not go against the big lifetime exemption. So the way that it kind of works is, right, when you pass away, we're going to look at the value of your estate. And if it's under a certain amount, then you don't pay estate tax. But if it's over a certain amount, then you have the freebie amount, which is that exemption amount that is different every year. And then above that, you pay a 40% tax. So today, the lifetime exemption amount is $15 million per person. So that means that I have $15 million worth of big chunky gifts over and above those annual exclusion gifts that I can give to people without having to pay gift tax or estate tax if I use it at death. And a lot of clients, I would say some of the most popular things that we see is, right, gifting to kids, whether it's, like I said, proceeds after a sale or interest in the business prior to the sale. So it's a lot of trust for children so that, right, we set up a nice inheritance for them or grandkids, those sorts of things, very much within the family. Sometimes we do see what are called spousal lifetime access trusts because, you know, sometimes dependent upon the family situation or how we want to benefit or what that looks like, you'll see those a lot too. But I would say those are the two most popular types of irrevocable trusts that I see here in Texas if we are looking to kind of push some of the value out of the estate and use that lifetime exemption currently.
And taking it one step further, can you speak to, please, let's say I've got $10 million of valuation, how that may be discounted in terms of repositioning it off balance sheet? Is it a true $10 million that's being used of the exemption amount or perhaps something less?
It will definitely depend on what you're gifting, right? If you're gifting just like a small piece of your business, so it's just a minority portion of the business. You really have no control over what happens because the bulk of the business is owned by somebody else. You know, if it's something that's a little bit more closely held and not something that, right, I can't just go on the public market and buy into that particular business, then there are potentially discounts for what are called lack of control and lack of marketability. So potentially, right, we go and we get a third party valuation for this for gift tax purposes, but potentially, if all of those parameters kind of fit in, there are potential discounts. So instead of gifting, right, we've got a $10 million business, but I'm going to gift $1 million to my child. If I get a discount, then maybe the gift tax valuation is really only like $800,000, even though the full value without a discount is $1 million. So you can kind of leverage it there depending upon how you structure the gift and the valuation that you get for it.
So, you know, Jennifer's talking about some of the more technical stuff on the estate planning side. Let's talk about the emotional side, the relationship side, and the impact of a sale. You know, we're talking about a significant amount of money in some cases here when somebody has a big exit. Kind of shed some light on your approach on helping these families prepare for such a sudden, you know, liquidity event. And perhaps for those that are charitably inclined, like, how do you guide that? How do you make sure that, like, the next generation feels that things are fair and equal and all of that kind of stuff that goes into that conversation?
Good luck with that one.
So no one gets emotional around money.
Right. Exactly. We wouldn't be having this conversation. One of the things I like to do when I sit down with families in these kind of early conversations is really ask them four questions. And I like to start with kind of the sale is going to happen. You're going to have this wealth. What do you want this wealth to do for you? And then I ask, what do you want your wealth to do for your children or family? And then the flip side, what do you want your wealth not to do to your children and family? And the last question is, what do you want your wealth to do for your community, or how you define that? And I feel like those four questions kind of encapsulate what we're talking about here. And we're talking about family governance, of course. We're talking about the wealth, relationships change, and identity. And so we want to sit down and talk to families about how this is going to affect your family. If you think about it, I mean, the business owner, this has been what they've been doing for years. This is who they are. It's also sometimes part of their identity. And then when you sell the business, there is a sense of, what do I do now? How do I keep my family together? And so we walk them through these ideas because in our group, we want these families to flourish. We want them to flourish generations. We want to have the conversations. And we talk about what we call the four C's. That is clarity. We want to make sure that our clients are, they're being transparent, they're clear. And to your point earlier, the dimmer switch, a little bit at a time. This doesn't all have to happen at once. Clarity, as I've said, transparency, communication is so key. Is having this intentional conversation with your family. Families sit around the table. Some families have every Sunday dinner together. They are on vacations together. They show up for each other. They love each other. But they have never had the conversation about money and wealth. And so we encourage to have that intentional conversation, as well as in the end, figure out and identify your family culture, your family traditions. That helps with values, what's important to you, what's important to your family members. And then ultimately, cohesion. And for many, selling the business, we've gone from being the business owner to then the family. We have the business of the family. We've had the family business. So now we're going to talk about the business of a family. And that may be philanthropy. That may be the glue that keeps you all together. In our practice here at UBS, and Jennifer and I do a lot of these together, you all know, we always encourage family meetings. And family meetings can be everything from us sitting down with a family for an hour to a day and a half retreat, where we're going to walk through these questions. We're going to help the family have the conversation. So the families aren't doing this by themselves. A lot of our clients don't know even how to have the conversation. I'm sitting here telling you, start talking about it, but they don't know. And so I always encourage family meeting where we can get everyone around the table. We have different ways that we pull the family together. We do activities to actually encourage the conversation and have that intentional discussion around the wealth. You know, I'd like to also share that when we're talking about all this, and the families in this tradition, in this transition, and they're coming into this significant financial capital, I try to also frame this around the fact that's just one part of a family's true wealth. Family has this financial capital, but the other four are human capital, social capital, intellectual capital, and of course, spiritual capital. And those five capitals really, really what makes up your family's wealth identity. And even though you may have sold a business and you have, and you're not necessarily doing day-to-day work, and all this also depends on the age of your children and family, did the children work in the business or not? So these are all questions to have. But these five capitals really talk about what each member of the family, their importance and what they bring to the family. And ultimately, even if your father or grandfather started this business and created this wealth for you all, this financial wealth, ultimately each generation is a wealth creating generation because we have these five capitals and we cultivate those relationships. And so those are just some of the things that we encourage our families to start with. It's actually just, let's have this conversation.
How often do you see tears during that, or just laughter or epiphanies? It's some of the more emotional conversations we ever have with clients. It's amazing. Yeah.
All of the above. And we did an exercise on communication with a family, and there were four sisters. And at the end, they all looked at each other and they realized, I mean, they're in their 60s and 50s. These ladies realized, oh my God, now I know how we are communicating the right way and how we didn't communicate before. And it was just so eye-opening for the family. And from then on, we were able to, you know, facilitate conversations around that without any sort of resentment or anger, or many times everybody falls into the role you play in the family. And we also try, when we get around the table, is to kind of keep those at the door. And when you walk in, we want you to be your individual selves. We have ways of ensuring that we can get you to not sit next to somebody, not sit at the head of the table. We want to make sure that any sort of drama, not drama per se, but typical family roles, is that we can kind of leave that at the door and actually focus on what's important to us and then thus the family.
How do you, Deborah, when you talk about philanthropy, I think that, does that fall into the social capital that you mentioned?
It can, yes.
Yeah.
I think it falls into all of them, but go ahead.
Sure. How does that planning come up, like before the sale, like thinking about philanthropy pre-transaction versus kind of post-transaction?
Oh, no, great question.
And now that goes to both of, you know, both you and Jennifer, actually, so.
I would say Jennifer probably will echo this. I mean, a big mistake is not having this before the sale. Mm-hmm. And we want, as I've said, I kind of feel like a broken record. We want you to have the conversations as early as possible. We want the charitable giving to be part of the flow of the sale and not the disruption. We want to go ahead and get the discussion going about a charitable vehicle, if it's a donor advised fund, is it a private foundation? For many, that's just a vehicle, the transaction that's going to happen. And we can talk at a later date about activating that and discussing how you're going to apply your philanthropy to your community. We want our clients to decide, you know, early on that they want to be philanthropic. Not everybody's philanthropic. They want you to be philanthropic, but you can park your money and in this charitable vehicle. And then we'll come back and very thoughtfully sit down and walk through a philanthropic framework. We'll formalize something. We'll talk through your values, what's important to you, where you want to give, how you want to give, who do you want to give to. You know, we'll really work on the kind of family governance structure around philanthropy. And I see that, I think I mentioned it earlier, I see this really being a glue for the family. For many families, especially with a sizable sale, they've been working in this business for years. Maybe the children, maybe even the third generation, have been in the business and it's now sold. Having this charitable vehicle in place ready to go kind of can transfer kind of that family business into the business of the philanthropy. You know, we also have a lot of questions from families. They'll say, you know, is this something we should do together? Should we involve our kids? And I'm always saying, yes, let's keep your family together. Let's have these conversations and let's explore together our giving motivations, our vision. There are many ways to slice the philanthropic pie. You know, we want them talking about it as early as possible. And again, I always tell clients, I mean, and Jennifer can chime in, you may not know what you want to do with the philanthropy yet. You've just parked it into a charitable vehicle. And then when things kind of calm down and the sale is complete, we can then talk about how to deploy those funds and distribute them and what's important to you. And that's when we start walking through philanthropy mission, your vision, your focus, how you want to give the money away, who's doing what. But, you know, really just go ahead and get this vehicle set up, the transaction, and it's done and complete. And then we can talk about the transition to actually having this philanthropy business, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one thing that I would just point out to those that are listening as well is the importance of kind of collaborating with your entire team, your wealth management team, your estate planning attorney, your accountant, and kind of walk through the planning that you've put in place so that you know kind of how funds flow, the tax implications of various type of trusts. And we've seen some situations where a plan is put in place and there are end up being unintended consequences to that game plan. And so just collaborating is and ensuring that all of your advisors are on the same page is so important.
We've seen many times where there's considerable planning in place, some high level advanced planning, and yet we know we've done this, we know we've done that, but we're not too sure exactly how this is all going to work out. Can you please give us a primer on it?
I should say that I think that's what, you know, Jennifer and I are here for, is to encourage all the advisors around the table and with the family and to walk through it all. And you know, we can do as little as much as they need at the time.
Is there any advantage to be had to peeling off a stake of the valued asset and donating it pre-transaction?
There can be, for sure. So, I mean, I think to Deborah's point, right, setting up the charitable vehicle, especially if you're charitably inclined and you want to do that, is very well taken. I think from my side of that picture is maybe we don't need to know exactly like the full-blown charitable aspect of it, who we're giving to, but there is a decent amount of planning that needs to go into it, especially if you want to do it pre-sale. I know I talked about that assignment of income doctrine, right? If we know like it's kind of set in stone and done, and then we do the charitable gift, it might not get you the same kind of income tax benefits that you thought that it was going to get, right? Talking about setting up a plan and not realizing exactly what you've done. So you do need to be very careful on the timing of it. However, it can be very, very beneficial to do it pre-sale versus post-sale, because, right, post-sale is the income tax hit has happened now, whatever that might be. And so you're using potentially after-tax proceeds to then make a charitable gift. Whereas if you do it pre-sale, you can potentially, right, get a piece of your business out of your estate. And so that portion that if it's done correctly and in a timely manner, you'll get a charitable deduction for the donation. But then when that portion sells in the charitable vehicle, there's potentially no income taxes associated with that portion. Again, if everything is done correctly. So there can be an added benefit there as well. And then you have this pot in whatever the charitable vehicle might be to kind of then go and deploy, right? And that's really like where Deborah shines in her group. So there is some planning ahead of time that you really need to think about. And the structure of your business, right, whether it's a limited liability company, it's a C corporation, S corporation, whatever that is, that can affect the charitable planning. And there can be some like income tax consequences that sometimes people are not aware of. So really doing all like the detail work ahead of time, making sure we know all of that, especially if you want to make this charitable gift, that there's not going to be any kind of issue with just bare minimum the way that the entity is structured and cause unintended income tax consequences to it, even aside from assignment of income doctrine issues. And just making sure, because the charitable vehicle you pick also can determine, right, what kind of deduction you might get. There's a bunch of new rules now about that too. So really kind of pre-planning and thinking through that, if charity is something that you want to include in this, really being very thoughtful, both from an income tax planning perspective, and then also once that is all set up and taken care of, then really being thoughtful about your actual charitable giving.
Mm-hmm. Let's kind of shift here. We've been talking about pre-sale planning. Let's move to the post-sale reality check. The sale closes. What happens next? Like Jennifer, what does success actually look like post-sale?
I'd say maybe this is more a Deborah topic, but at least from my perspective, obviously it depends on the individual, right? Like we have had a lot of clients that post-sale is maximizing those proceeds. Like what is the best way that I can bring home the most money possible? And if we've done enough of the planning ahead of time, you know, hopefully we accomplish that goal. For other people, it's passing on the legacy of it, right? I've built up this business. I've now sold it, but I want to make sure that I'm benefiting, whether it's dynastically for kids and grandkids and all of those people. I've set up those vehicles, and now post-sale, I can see the fruits of my labor, right? It's in these vehicles. I can see my kids or charity, whatever it is, kind of benefiting from it and kind of what I have left and get to enjoy that going forward. So it is very specific to the individual and the family, but I'd say that's kind of a lot of what we see in different combinations of that.
Yeah, we've been talking about a little bit about philanthropy and becoming kind of that shared purpose for the family, that new sort of family business there. What are some of the governance practices or engagement models that you recommend for families to kind of help them become more aligned and sustainable over time? Like, I'm just thinking, you know, top of mind, you have someone with a desire to be engaged with the arts, and another family maybe wants to help kids out that are disadvantaged or malnourished kids or whatever tugs at their heart. Like, is there any sort of framework that you use to kind of help people or families navigate that?
Absolutely. That's probably the core of my work, is talking strategy and structure around your philanthropic giving and planning. And that's something that we, you know, most of us on our team, we will sit down with the client and the family, and we have what we kind of like a governance workbook or a game plan, and we're going to walk through all of those questions. And so we're going to start with, you know, what's important to them. And for many families, we look backwards before we look forwards. And if they've been giving, we always tell people, if you've already been giving, we're happy to discuss with you how to activate it and elevate it. And if you haven't at all, then we'll also start to help you plan for it, plan it, and activate. I mean, some people come to us and they've never really given money away, and that's okay, because it's hard to give money away. So you have this pot of money. How do you do it? We say that philanthropy is biography. And so it's really that emotional conversation with individuals and families. We walk through essentially values exercises to talk about what's important. And a lot of it, we have kits that actually help you with walking through. We have one that's called our philanthropic visioning kit, and it has post-it notes and questions that you write answers to on the notes, walking you through, I care about the arts and culture, or, you know, I really care about education, or some people, you know, went to school on scholarships, they want to pay it forward and create a scholarship. And so really it's a conversation that we have with our families, walking through what are they interested in. And sometimes it is like, I need to find out in the conversation, what do you do with your time? What's a family tradition? What is something that you do in your family culture? That'll help through the conversation. You realize, oh, these things are important to me. And it may be faith-based. And so we'll talk about areas that you care about giving. And then we go deeper. If you care about education, what is it about the education? Do you want to help build schools? Do you want to help with programs? Do you want to make sure kids go to school, you know, and you create those scholarships? It's all very personal. And what we do is we try to help our clients kind of frame what's important to them. We then frame where they want to give. Do you want to just keep your community local, or do you want to give through national organizations or even internationally? And here at UBS, we have the Optimist Foundation that could help our clients give internationally. So it's really just having those conversations and talking through kind of the governance structure. And I kind of go back to the framework I always talk about, building the house. Like, we're going to help you figure out what it's going to look like. We're going to help you frame it. We're going to talk about how many rooms you need to have, what you're going to do in each room. Then we're going to talk about how you want to decorate it. And then we're going to have fun and help you actually live in it. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of our job, is to really walk you through the areas of interest, your focus interests, where you want to give. And for many, like I said, it's sitting down and talking about your values. And the other thing is this is family philanthropy. So let's bring all of our family around the table. Age appropriate, of course. We bring in the next generation. We talk about what's important to them, because different generations have different focus in their giving. Some are now focused on environment and climate, and others, like you said, are focused on the arts and ensuring that music is continued at the local symphony. So we want to make sure we bring in the younger generations or the next gen, and we want to make sure that it reflects who they are as a family. We want our families kind of aligned. We want them confident in their giving, and we want them to continue to be connected. And that's connected with each other, as well as with their communities for which they want to support.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is great stuff. I just to kind of recap what we've covered so far, you know, we've talked about the importance of pre-planning and some of the kind of more technical strategies of shifting some of that future wealth outside of your estate and how that can help mitigate estate taxes. We talked about income taxes and philanthropy. And then on the family advisory side, some great questions, Deborah, that you've mentioned for families to think about, like, what do you want this money to do to you? Do for you? What do you want it to do for your family? What do you want it not to do to your family? And also, what do you want the money to do for your community? Those are fantastic questions that I think people could spend a lot of time on those questions there. You know, walk through the four C's, you know, that having clarity, being transparent and clear with the family, strong communication measures, and being very intentional in how you're communicating this wealth and the culture of the family and having shared values and people understanding where other family members are coming from, and then cohesion, which is the business of the family, and that philanthropy side of things. I love the five forms of capital too, which is, you know, financial, the financial capital, the human capital, the social capital, intellectual capital, and spiritual capital. Again, lots of really deep things that somebody could spend a lot of time thinking about. And then having family meetings, just having a little bit more structure to a family meeting to kind of educate the rest of the family on all this stuff and how to think about this stuff. You know, oftentimes a lot of the founders that we work with, they didn't have this kind of money before we started working with them. There's no reason to think about a lot of this stuff when you don't have the assets to work with, then you're faced with a nice financial event. So just to kind of wrap it all up here, we're kind of getting towards the end. I want to be respectful of your time and also the listener's time, but the final piece of advice here, I'll ask both of you, if you could leave each business owner or leave a business owners with one key takeaway, like what would it be? Like if a business owner is just starting to think about a sale, what's one just small step they can take today? So I'll start with you, Jennifer, and then Deborah, you can answer.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would say don't wait, like right, the what we've been talking about this whole time. You know, you can end up leaving money on the table, and it's really the sooner you start, the earlier you start, your planning becomes more impactful. I mean, even just from an estate planning perspective, watching people that gifted early and then seeing what it results in down the road and how much wealth they have accumulated is sometimes shocking. And it just really is so impactful if you can get in early and do that planning and not do it in a kind of a rushed, like we've got a deadline coming up kind of mindset, because mm-hmm. then sometimes that's where you do things that maybe you regret down the road, as opposed to starting early and really being thoughtful about it.
Deborah?
I kind of said this earlier, treat the sale as a family transition, not just a transaction. It's not just a liquidity event. Start this conversation early. The families can navigate this well if they talk early and honestly about what's going to change. Inviting, like I said, having the family meeting, inviting your family into that dialogue early. Talk about how you can use the wealth, how it's even invested. Let's start with some financial education. And then let's talk about creating shared experiences around this wealth. If it's through giving, if it's through family travel, but to actually just kind of start creating those shared experiences. And I really think that when you talk with your family, you talk with them about what matters most to them. And then you're able to prepare them, not just financially, but emotionally and relationally to the wealth. They have a better chance of being positive and flourishing with this type of conversations, intentional communication.
Mm-hmm.
And one last thing I would say, I would also say, get all of us around the table with you and we'll help you with this transition. I think that's key, is to bring in your advisors.
Well, on that note, both of you have been immensely helpful to our practice. You've been immensely valuable to our clients and you're so appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
You really are.
Very grateful to have you as part of our extended team. I know our clients share the same feeling as well. And so, what a great initial podcast to kick off 2026. I mean, working with private founders or founders of privately held companies is core of what we do, and we love it. So I think this is a great way to kick off 2026.
And we'll be bugging both of you within the next hour with more situations.
Thank you for inviting us to the call. We're here to help.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. And for the listeners that are still with us, thank you for hanging in there. We appreciate you. And there's any questions that you might have, or if there's a situation you're thinking through, feel free to reach out to us. Our team email address is atxwealthpartners@ubs.com. And with that, have a great day and take care.
Cheers.
Thank you for tuning in to Lightning in a Bottle. It's been a pleasure bringing you today's insights from the brightest minds in business. To stay updated with relevant content, exclusive events, and our latest podcast episodes, send us a note to atxwealthpartners.com. Until next time, keep capturing the lightning of innovation and turning it into success. I'm Josh Pottinger, wishing you a productive and prosperous week ahead. And don't forget, know your options, be informed, and plan early. Take care and be well.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.